Easter is the Christian holiday of celebrating the day that Jesus rose from the dead. But Easter, where does that come from? Where do the bunnies come from? Where do the eggs come from? And it's actually an appropriation of the goddess of the dawn, whose name was Easter. And it's really a fantastic example of queering when this goddess's name was rendered totally meaningless and emptied out of all meaning.
So we've already taken our shots at Christmas and Valentine's Day, so I think it's time for us to take our shots at Easter. What's wrong with Easter? Well, a lot of things. And I want to start with a story from when I was a kid. I was raised a Seventh-day Adventist, and I remember when I was, gosh, 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, thinking how extraordinary it was. Well, the way I put this is that I got the wrong end of the logical stick. And what I mean by that is that I thought it was amazing that the entire world was based on the story of Jesus, in that Jesus died and was then brought back to life. And it, you know, I grew up in the country and I recognized very young that life requires death. And so I thought it was extraordinary that the entire world was based on the Jesus story of death and rebirth, that you have some creature die so another can eat that creature and live, or you plant seeds and then they sort of die, they stand aground for a while and come up. And of course, in retrospect, I find it extremely, you know, cute and endearing, because I had the entire thing backwards, that the story of Jesus was in fact based on life, that they, you know, any good myth has to take some reality and then turn that into a story. If it doesn't match reality on some level, then it won't last. And so the story of Jesus is really, in many ways, the story of death and rebirth on one level. And that part is fine to have a story about death and rebirth, because we have to learn that all life is based on death and rebirth. But from there, the story gets actually pretty spotty. And there are a bunch of problems. One of them is that, well, I want to go to a very good book that I read maybe 10 years ago called Not in His Image by John Lamb Lash. And basically, it's quite a good book. And what his central analysis is to ask, so what are some of the unique attributes of Jesus's preachings, and what are the implications of them? And he'll start by talking about how, you know, clearly the Old Testament God is just a nasty, abusive, mean-spirited, jealous. Basically, the Old Testament God is a classic description of an abusive patriarchal male. He's the abusive father. And so then Jesus, some of the things that Jesus talks about are the importance of forgiving one's enemy, of turning the other cheek, that even if someone hits you, you're supposed to let them hit you again, and then hit you again, and then hit you again. And I believe it was unto 70 times 7 times or something. It's 490. I believe that's in there somewhere. Might not be. You're also supposed to forgive everyone who does anything to you. And you're also supposed to love your enemies, by which is meant love those who do great harm to you. So one of the brilliant things that John Lamb Lash did was he put this into the context of abusive relationships. So basically, the God the Father is the patriarchal abuser, and Jesus is the classic ally to an abuser. Because everything that Jesus said is what is said to every woman who is attempting to leave her abusive husband. They say, oh gosh, you just have to love him more. You have to keep forgiving him. You have to turn the other cheek. You know, my mother, when she was trying to get away from my father, she was told this by so many people in the church. This was a mantra. And this is true in any abusive situation. So what this does is this turns the Old Testament and the New Testament into just a fabulous 1-2 punch of the overt patriarchal abuser and the ally to the abuser who keeps you tied to the abuser. It's absolutely brilliant. So there's one part of this. Another part that's really problematical with the whole Jesus story is, let's leave that aside and we'll instead just sort of take at face value somebody coming to town and saying, you know, I think you should love each other and you should, you know, forgive when somebody harms you, and we should all, you know, get along in peace. And the important question to ask, George Gerbner, he's the guy who wrote about, he's the TV violence guy. He studied TV violence for 40 years. You know, when people say, oh gosh, there's so much violence on television, they're doing his studies. And he studied what happens, how many acts of violence there are for 40 years. And brilliant stuff. But he told me, I interviewed him back in the 90s, a really good interview. He's great. And one of the things he said to me that is that almost everybody misinterprets his data. That yes, there's a lot of violence on television. That's all very important. But that's not the real point. The real point is always who does what to whom. And so, for example, you get somebody like Bruce Willis is playing a cop. He can kill 55 people in the first 7 minutes, and that's fine. And what that's teaching us is that white males, especially white males who are cops, can commit violence with impunity. It's okay. On the other hand, if there's a woman who commits an act of violence in a movie, this is changing some, as with women cops, but if there's a normal woman in a story, if she commits an act of violence, the entire story has to be about how would she come to commit this terrible act of violence. And he called this casting in fate, which is, forget the other elements of the story. The question is, who does what to whom? What happens? So if you think about the Jesus story in terms of casting in fate, it's, okay, so somebody comes to town, and forget the sort of larger metaphor, somebody comes, the death and rebirth bit, but somebody comes to town, and he's saying, hey, I think we should all treat each other nice, and let's all be nice to each other, and let's all love each other, and let's forgive people when they do something bad to you. What happens to somebody who does that? They get killed. That's another real lesson of the story of Jesus, is come to us and talk about love, and we're going to kill you. And then within about 100 years, we will form a religion that will be killing each other in your name. So that's the real lesson of the story of Jesus as well. And there's another part of the story of Jesus too. And I don't remember if I got this from feminists or from John Lamb Lash, and probably from both. But another part, another problematical part of the story of Jesus, and one of the lines they reference is, suffer the children to come unto me. And one of the things that is happening here is, so we know that Jesus is reborn on Sunday, and that's the point of Easter in some ways, is to, you know, the resurrection. And the interesting thing, well, I'm going to back up. Let's put a little pause there, and we're going to talk about, for a second, Peggy Reeve Sanday. And she talks about, she's an anthropologist who talks about the characteristics of high-rape cultures and low-rape cultures. And one of the characteristics of a high-rape culture is it's highly militarized, pretty obvious. Another characteristic of a high-rape culture is that women are generally devalued compared to men, pretty obvious. One of the ones, and the one I want to focus on right now, is where you have a male creator deity as opposed to a female creator deity or a couple creator deities. And that is really counterintuitive to have a dude who creates everything when in real life, women are the ones who actually give birth. And this is true with plants too, that you have, if you have a plant that is sexually dimorphic, marijuana comes to mind, the male puts out lots of pollen, and then the female actually produces the seeds. She's the one who carries the young. This is true for humans. It's true for most animals. The only reason I'm saying most is because I know there are a couple species of mollies and a couple species of lizards who do parthenogenesis, where males are unnecessary completely. And same with some insects, but just leave those aside. With most animals, and slugs, you got hermaphrodites, so leave all that aside. Generally, it is the women who carry life. And so one of the things that happens with Jesus, with this celebration of, I mean, that's the point of spring, and that's the point of Easter, is it's a spring celebration. Estrus, you know, it comes, that's where the root comes from, estrus. But I'm sorry, what's missing in this story? We have a guy who dies and then is reborn, and he's a guy. So go back to Peggy Reeve Sande talking about male creator deities being one sign or one marker of a high rate culture. And in Christianity, you have the big guy, God himself, who created the world. And then later on, you have Jesus who dies and then is reborn. And so both of those are male. So it's very much, that's another bad lesson that's being taught there. And then I want to add too, there's another problem with the Jesus story as well. And this has offended me for a long, long time, which is, it is set up in the entire Old Testament that God set these rules out, but humans are so sinful that none of us can actually obey all those rules all the time, and we will all sin. All humans are sinful. So that's kind of a depressing lesson right there, and kind of a, it's a classic setting up for failure. You know, he creates these rules, and this is a classic abuser too, creates these rules, some of which are quite arbitrary. Like, why do you not do anything from Friday afternoon to Saturday afternoon? Why is that the Sabbath? Why exactly can I not eat clams? I'm not really sure. Why is it that I can eat cow, but I can't eat pig? We can have arguments about trichinosis, but let's leave those aside. It's like, why can't I eat catfish? What is wrong with catfish? Shrimp. Shrimp's perfectly fine. You know, I still remember, as a Seventh-day Adventist, we followed the Old Testament, and we couldn't eat ham. I still remember my first ham sandwich in high school. It was, you know, it's kind of like what they say about crack, that sandwich was so good that I've been pursuing that ham sandwich ever since then. It was just unparalleled. But anyway, so why can't you eat ham? So there's all these arbitrary rules. You can't touch the skin of a pig, which rules out football as well. So that's classic abuser. But then what happens is, not only is it bad enough that there are all these arbitrary rules that we certainly can't follow, but then he's got to send his fucking son to actually live a sinless life. So what that proves is, hey, y'all could have done this if you just worked hard enough. He did it. What the hell's wrong with you? So that's another problem with that story. And another way that this reinforces his abusive dynamics is that you have these arbitrary and ridiculous rules set up, and then you have this one shining example of one person who's actually able to do it, which means what the hell's wrong with you? So it's even more problematical. So those are some of my primary concerns with Easter, from a patriarchal perspective. And then I guess I have two more sets of concerns. One is the animal rights perspective, which is so many people think it's really cool, and then they go and get their 6-year-old kid a bunny or a chick, and a colored chick who has been dyed even quite often, and who has been dyed and then soon does die. So yeah, if you have a place to rent chickens and rabbits, great. That's all fine. You know, go rescue one from a rescue center. So that's the second problem. And the third problem, of course, is that, like with everything else that capitalism does, it has turned this into a major moneymaker, as people buy chocolate bunnies, they buy fake grass, they buy new outfits, they buy little bow ties, they buy bunny hats. It's just another excuse for us to use the words of George Ritzer, to enter the cathedrals of consumption. So I guess in conclusion, I would like to leave with two things. One of them is that so far we've talked about Christmas and Valentine's Day and Easter and how all of those celebrations of important parts of real physical life and the natural world and living on this planet are converted by patriarchy and capitalism into supporting this culture's deathly and abusive directions. So I guess I would like for people to think about how that is true with other celebrations as well. And the other thing I would, the other conclusion I would like to leave people with would be that we, you know, Easter is supposed to be a celebration of life and affirmation of life and the new life in spring and estrus, which means the female, and the life-giving fecundity of this planet. And I'm just wondering if there might be better, more appropriate and more enjoyable and life-affirming ways to celebrate all of those than going to one of Ritzer's cathedrals of consumption and buying plastic grass. So you might consider celebrating Easter in a way that really does celebrate estrus.